Today's shiur is Masechta Ksubos Daf Pei Dalad, and we will begin on Daf Pei Gimel Amud Beis, five lines from the bottom of Shimon ben Gamliel Omer. We had learnt in the Mishnah in the previous shiur that Shimon ben Gamliel taught us at the end of the Mishnah that even if a husband is explicit in saying to his wife, "Dinat dvarm enli ben chasayich," that I don't want to have any, I relinquish and I renounce my rights to your properties, both while you're alive and after you pass away. The halacha is, said Rav Shimon Gamliel, that since the din that a husband yarshens a wife is a din that the Torah taught us, so we now have a situation of masna amashakos b'Torah. He's saying a condition, he's making stipulation against something which is clearly stated in the Torah, and teaches us Rav Shimon Gamliel the kol hamasna mashakos b'Torah, if somebody makes a stipulation against what it says explicitly in the Torah, to know a bottle, his stipulation is void. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav, Rav makes a statement, halacha k'Rav Shimon Gamliel, the halacha follows the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel, however, v'lav mitamei, but not for the same reason that Rav Shimon Gamliel set forth. Ask the Gemara, what does this mean? My halacha k'Rav Shimon Gamliel v'loy mitamei. Ilema, you'll say, what Rav meant to say was, halacha k'Rav Shimon Gamliel, dama meisi yirushena. Rav will agree with what Rav Shimon Gamliel said, that even if the husband made a stipulation that he should not inherit his wife's nechsi melug, if she predeceases him, that stipulation is void. However, v'lav mitamei, not for the same reason that Rav Shimon Gamliel said. Dil Rav Shimon Gamliel savar, Rav Shimon Gamliel's reasoning was, as we just explained, because Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that mas namasha kos b'Torah t'na batal. If somebody makes a stipulation versus what it says in the Torah, his t'nai is void. V'rav savar, but Rav really hold t'na kayim, that his t'nai is valid, even if it goes against what it says in the Torah. However, why over here does Rav hold that the stipulation is void, and that he will yarshen his wife? Because Rav holds Yerushas Abal de Rabbanan, the din that a husband inherits his wife's nichsi melug is a din de Rabbanan. The Chacham also chizik ledivreyem yois mishatayra. Chazal were more concerned about rules that they set forth versus rules that the Torah sets forth. And the reason is very simple. Something which is said in the Torah carries much more seriousness. And since it carries much more seriousness, we don't have to be worried that it will be voided. On the other hand, something which is only a takan rabbanan, Chazal were concerned that people would not treat it with the proper seriousness, and that's why Chazal made this rule that if you try to say a stipulation against what the rabbanan said, the stipulation is void. Ask Tosfos, if that's the case, let's look at the first din of our Mishnah. The first din of our Mishnah was that if a husband made a t'nai, which we understood the t'nai to mean that he wants that he should not eat the peiros of the nechsi melug, which is also a din de rabbanan, Chazal said that din is that relinquishment, that renouncement is valid. But if Rav is teaching us, as Tosfos, that anything that's mid the rabbanan we're very concerned about, so why doesn't Rav void that stipulation also? So Tosfos answers that since that a wife should bring nichsi melug, that make peiros, into a marriage is very loshrich, very uncommon. That's why Chazal did not see the need to strengthen the takana. Other Rishonim explain that where did Chazal find the need to strengthen their takonis? Those aren't takonis that have a similar situation in the Doraisa. For example, the case that we're discussing, Yerusha. Yerusha is certainly a concept that we find in the Torah. Just Yerusha of a husband to a wife, a husband of a wife, is only midrabbanan. So that's the type of takana that Chazal seek to strengthen. However, the type of takana that has no precedent in the Doraisa, those are not the type of takanas Chazal seek to strengthen. Another teretz is that when a husband waives his rights to the peiros, it's a much stronger situation, because we're dealing with a situation where he actually has those peiros at hand and decided that he will forego his rights in those peiros. That, the Rishonim explain, is more a concept of mechila, and even though that's a rabbinic enactment, and typically, as we're learning now, Rav holds, we try to strengthen those type of takanas. This is mechila, which is a whole different concept, which will be valid even by the rabbanim. Ask the Gemara. According to this understanding, Rav holds the masna mashikos b'Torah. If somebody makes a stipulation against what it says in the Torah, Tanoi Kayim. Is that true? Ask the Gemara v'itmar. We learned in Masechta Bava Metzia. Haimer l'chaveroi. If somebody sells something to his colleague, and he tells him, Mamash ein l'cha alayin no. I'm selling to you with the stipulation that you have no right to claim that there's a situation of a no. A no means price fraud, which the Gemara Masechta Bava Metzia teaches us the following. If the overcharge is more than a sixth of the price, then the transaction is void. If the overcharge is exactly one-sixth, this transaction stands. However, the seller has to reimburse the buyer that one-sixth. If the overcharge is less than a sixth, then the sale is fine and there's no need for reimbursement. So the Gemara Masechta Bava Metzia says, I'm selling you this item with the stipulation that you cannot ever claim that there was a situation of price fraud here. Rav Amar Yesh Lo Yanov. He can't make such a stipulation. Since the Torah set forth the halachas of Eino, we don't have the ability to override them. Shmuel says that since he made the stipulation, the stipulation is valid. So here we see that according to Rav, the Gemara over there differentiates if it's a stipulation regarding dinei mamonis, financial issues, as the case there, versus other situations. But what we see from here is that Rav holds that under all situations, one cannot make a stipulation against what it says in the Torah. So how can we suggest that Rav holds the master mashikos v'Torah t'nar kayim? Says the Gemara, again, trying to understand the statement Rav made at the beginning of our shir, the locker of Shimon Gamliel of Loi Metamei, and explains the Gemara this way. El locker of Shimon Gamliel, the locker of Shimon Gamliel, domer hamasna mashakos b'tayr tana bottle, however v'lav metamei, not for the reasoning that Rav Shimon Gamliel said. Dil Rav Shimon Gamliel sova meisi rishana, Rav Shimon Gamliel said that even if the husband made this renouncement, he was still inherit his wife. Rav Sover Mesa Layrav Shana. However, Rav holds they will not inherit her, because Rav holds that this inheritance is only a din de Rabbanon. So it's not a situation of Masna Mashikos Batira. Says the Gemara, if that's what Rav holds, Hai Mitamei Veloy Mihilchase. So now Rav agrees in concept with Rav Shimon that Masna Mashikos Batara Tanoi Bottle, but he doesn't agree with the way he paskins in this situation. Because in this situation, Rav holds that he will inherit the wife when he made the stipulation, and Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that he will not inherit the wife, because he holds that the Yerusha of a husband of a wife is a Deraisa. So it's just the opposite of what Rav said. So the Gemara makes another attempt. El Alokra Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav says the Alokra follows the opinion of Shimon Gamliel. Domer, who says in Mesi Rishano, that even if the husband made a stipulation that he should not inherit his wife, the stipulation is void. because Master Masha Kosba Tairo to no bottle. However, Rav doesn't follow the same reasoning as Rav Shimon Gamliel. Deal Rav Shimon Gamliel Savar, Rav Shimon Gamliel holds with the Raisa to no bottle. That when it's a situation when somebody's making a stipulation against what it says in the Torah, his stipulation is void. Habid Rabbanon, if he made a stipulation against a Rabbanon, Rav Shimon Gamliel will hold Tana Kayim, his stipulation does stand. Rav Sofer, and Rav even holds that not only when one makes a stipulation against what it says in the Torah is his stipulation void, but even I feel but Rabbanon Tana Batal. Even in a situation of a Rabbanon, his Tanai is void. Ask the Gemara, if that's how we're going to understand Rav, then Rav is agreeing with Rav Shimon Gamliel's concept. He's agreeing that Master Masha Kosba Tairo to no bottle, and he's also agreeing with his halacha that in the case of our Mishnah, the Tanai would be void. Just Rav is Maisafu, Rav is even more stringent than Rav Shimon Gamliel. Whereas Rav Shimon Gamliel said his din only by Daraisa, Rav even says it by Drabonon. So what does it mean when the Gemara began? It says that Hilchasek Rav Shimon Gamliel v'loy metamei. So the Mefarshim ask that the Gemara is assuming in this explanation that Rav Shimon Gamliel holds the Masna Masha Kosma Torah to not bottle is only by Daraisa, not by Drabonon. Mefarshim want to know from where does the Gemara assume this pshat in Rav Shimon Gamliel. So one pshat that I saw, which is a fairly simple pshat, is that the Gemara learns it from the redundancy of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel's statement. Rav Shimon Gamliel's statement was that Meisha Masna Masha Kosu B'Toyra V'chal Masna Masha Kosu B'Toyra T'no Bottle. Why is he being that redundant? To stress, says the Mefarshim, that only in a situation of a Doraisa does Rav Shimon Gamliel hold his stipulation is void, not in a situation of a Drabonim. But there's a different approach in explaining how the Gemara makes this assumption. That approach really is based on a machloikis of Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi, when the Gemara here says that Rav holds that even by a Drabonim, the Tanai is void, so Rashi looks for an example of such a Drabonim. Rashi says the example is Shalayoichel Peiris, the first case of our Mishnah, that a husband made a Tanai that he will not eat the Peiris of the Nechsim Elok. Tosfos disagrees with Rashi, because we quoted Tosfos at the beginning of our Shia today, that Tosfos says that even if we hold that a Tanai versus a Drabonim is void, Peiris is Loi Shchicha. So we need to understand Rashi. So according to our understanding, we could understand Rashi very well. Because Rashi was bothered with the same question that we were bothered with. How do we know that Rav Shimon Gamliel holds the Master Masha Kosba Drabonon to no bottle? Where do we know it from? Says Rashi, because if Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that Tanoi's bottle, even with Rabbanon, why doesn't he argue in the first case of the Mishnah? It must be because Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that by the Rabbanon, we don't say that if he made a Tanai versus a Rabbanon, his stipulation is void. That's what forced Rashi. But now the question is, we need to further understand Rashi. Tosfos said a very nice explanation why Peiros, and we said other pshatim, why Peiris are different than all the other takanas derabanan, and why we should hold that even if one makes a Tanai regarding the Peiris, it should be valid, answers the Megillat Shlomo. That explanation that we gave, those explanations that we gave at the beginning of our shiur, are only if we differentiate and we say that in certain situations the stipulation is valid, and in certain situations, the stipulation is void. So then we can begin to discuss where does Peiris begin? Where does Peiris fall in? However, now that we've established that according to Rav, under all circumstances, whether it's a deraisa or a derabanan, if one makes a stipulation versus these takanas, tanai batal, then we're not going to single out peiros to be different. And therefore Rashi says, the Rav will hold that if one makes a stipulation against peiros, the tanai will be batal. Taisus disagrees. Taisus holds it's a misud l'shchicha, and since it's a misud l'shchicha, makes no difference what we hold, that tanai could stand. Ella, so we're still trying to understand Rav Shimon, Rav's statement. Hilchsik Rav Shimon Gamliel v'loy metamei. Ella alok Rav Shimon Gamliel, dama meisi rishena. The halacha follows Rav Shimon Gamliel that even if the husband made the stipulation, he will inherit his wife. However, v'loy metamei. Dear Rav Shimon Gamliel sover Yerusha Sabal Daraisa. And Rav Shimon Gamliel holds Kol Master Mashakos Batayra Tanor Botel. For Rav sover Yerusha Sabal Darabonon. The Yerusha of a husband is only Darabonon. The Chum also Chizuk the Vrei Mishal Taira. So they have a very fundamental disagreement. Rav holds that the Yerusha is Darabonon. Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that the Yerusha is Daraisa. And Rav will therefore hold that therefore it's the tanai is void because chacham also chizuk devrayim bishal taira. Ask the Gemara: for Rav sover Yerusha sabal derabanan. Does Rav hold that the Yerusha of a husband is only derabanan? For tanan, there's a Mishnah Masecht Bechayrus that says Rabbi Yochanan Breika Omer has Yerushas ishtoi. If somebody inherits his wife, yachsel b'nei mishpacha, he returns by yovel the field that he yashins from his wife, and he has to deduct from them the price from them. Very difficult statement to understand. And we try to understand what does that Mishnah mean. Micah Sover, what does that Mishnah mean? Ik Sover Yerusha Sabal Daraisa, if the Mishnah holds, Rabbi Yochanan Breka holds, that the Yerusha of a husband is Midaraisa. So even though there is halacha, that any properties that were bought are returned to their original owners by Yovel, something, a property that one received through a Yerusha does not go back by Yovel. So then the question is, Amai Yachzer, why would the husband have to return the property, the Beis HaKfaris, that he inherited from his wife? Vid Rabbanon, if on the other hand we hold, the Rabbi Yochanan Breker holds that the entire din of Yerusha of a husband, of a wife, is only the Rabbanon, so then the question is, Dama Maya Vedetayu. So they, Yovel comes, the din of Yovel supersedes the Takara the Rabbanon, that the husband yashins the wife, and therefore he has to return the basic forest. But if that's the case, why do they have to compensate the husband? Vomarav, so Rav explained, Loyalim Kosover, Yerushas Valderaisa. He, Rabbi Yochanan Breker, holds that a husband yashins a wife mitzvah b'isa. But the case here was shirishta ishta basic forest. The property that he inherited was a basic forest, and therefore as a halacha b'shem begamish pacha, it's a disgrace to her family that an outsider, a stranger, is the one owning this yerusha, and therefore Chazal said om rabbanon lishkol dame. He should pay, he should take payment on Leheder and return the Beis HaKfaris, even though the Yerusha, within Yerusha, it's his. Ask Taisus, if that's the case, that the reason we're demanding that the husband sell back this Beis HaKfaris to the wife's family is because Mishum Begam Mishpacha, then why do we wait till Yovel? And indeed, because of this Kasha, some Rishonim say that it's not strictly Yovel when the wife's family is given the prerogative to buy back the basic forest. The Mishnah's there speaking about Yovel, but we don't have to wait for Yovel. Taisus, however, explains that the disgrace is only noticeable when Yovel comes. And he says a beautiful explanation. When it comes to Yovel, and everybody's getting back their original property, and this family, basic forest, doesn't go back to them, it's particularly shameful. And that's why then, and only then, do Chazal require that the husband be forced to sell back the Beis HaKfaris to the wife's family. So the Gemara Mayin Naklam and Adam. So now, what does it mean in the Mishnah that he deducts from the price? Answer the Gemara: the Meikiver Ishtoi. That even though he's selling back the Beis HaKforos to the wife's family, but the value of the plot that he buried his wife, and we have learned so many times in our Masechta that it's the obligation of a husband to take care of the burial of his wife. That value they don't have to pay. Kitanya, as we learned in the Braisa, Hamoicha Kevin V'Derech Kivroy. If somebody in a family sells a burial plot and the path to the burial plot, Mamodoy Makamas Bedoy, they used to have special places that were designated for the Mamet ceremony where they used to stop a number of times as they walked towards the Kfura, a place where they used to do it at Spadim. Boim B'nei Mishpacha, the family could come, and bury somebody from the family against the buyer's consent. Mishum B'gam Mishpacha, this is our family's burial spot. So here we see the Rav holds that Yerushas Habal is the Raisa. How are we suggesting, asks the Gemara, the Rav holds Yerushas Habal is the Rabbanan? Answers the Gemara. Rav L'tameh the Rav Yochim and Breuker Kama. Rav was explaining Rav Yochim and Breuker's statement in the Mishnah Masechta Bechayrus, however V'leiloi Sfirlei, he doesn't personally agree. And I saw that the Shor HaMetzion B'Halacha uses this concept of Gam Mishpacha to teach us a very interesting Halacha. That even though we know that the Halacha typically frowns against exhuming one from his burial place, says the Shor HaMetzion B'Halacha, since our Gemara just taught us the concept of Begam Mishpacha, from here we learn that we are allowed to exhume a body because if he was buried not in his family's burial spot. And furthermore, the Paiskim explain, based on this Gemara, something that we've previously discussed, that if there's a wife that passes away and her family wants that she should be buried with them, and the husband wants that he should be buried with her, from our Gemara it seems that the halacha is that she's buried with her husband. Furthermore, I saw that the Paiskim explain, based on our Gemara that taught us this concept of Begam Mishpacha, that something that belongs in a family stays in the family. I saw that the Mefarshim, the Paiskim discuss, especially in olden times, it was very important to people that they bought a seat in shul, and that seat remained with the family for generations. It was passed on birusha. So the Paiskim discuss a situation where there was somebody in a family who yashined somebody in the family passed away, and his yairish was young and not that significant, but he yashin the seat, a very good seat in the front of the shul. And his neighbors who were sitting next to him said, "You don't belong here, and you shouldn't sit amongst us." Here we see the concept, say the Paiskim, of a Gam Mishpacha, that a family can make this claim that this is our inheritance, and they cannot ask this gentleman to leave that seat. Although I did see a very interesting psak from Yitzchak Zilberstein. He says that the halacha is, we know, meis mitzvah koines mekoymai. If somebody's found dead on the road, even though it's not a cemetery, we bury him where he was found. Says Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, he discusses a situation, terrible accident happened in Eretz Yisrael, where there was a helicopter that crashed, and the people who were on the helicopter passed away and were buried on the ground where they were. And the halacha, says Rav Zilberstein, is that they're considered like meis mitzvah, and we bury them where they died on that ground. And now the family of these neftarim want to come to visit their graves. The person who owns the field where they're buried doesn't want to let them come. So the question is, does he have a right to deprive them of coming to see these graves? Of course, he says, it's very unacceptable. These people lost relatives in a terrible accident, and then that they shouldn't be given the opportunity to visit their relatives is very inappropriate. But he says, halachically, the owner of the field is correct. And he explains why. He says, when one buys a plot in a cemetery, when one owns a plot in a cemetery, part of the purchase is that that they will be taken care of, and that people, his family, could come and visit that grave. Like Al Gemara says, the Makam HaMaimid and the Makam HaMispid is included in the place of a cemetery plot. But this is not a cemetery, he explains. This is just a new din, that the halach is that someone who makes mitzvah koinim koinim, that if somebody dies in a certain spot, that's where we bury him. That doesn't turn the field into a cemetery that would obligate the owner of the field to allow the relatives to visit the graves. The halach is that if someone passes away and he leaves yarshim, so all the and he leaves yisaimim yarshim, all of the property that he leaves is mortgaged to debts that he had, to ksuba that he had. However, metaltalin that he leaves, cash or other such items, metaltalin the yasmi loy mishabdi. The metaltalin that are owned by the yisaimim are not mortgaged to any debts. There's a machloikis if this is a din d'oraisa, or this is only midrabana. Teaches us our mishnah. Mishemes, someone passed away, v'niach isha u'balchoy v'yarshim, and he left over a wife to whom he owes a ksuba. He left over creditors who he owes debt to v'yarshim, and he has yarshim. V'hayloi b'kodim a milva v'yad acherim, and he had a b'kodim that he had a deposit or a loan that was in the possession of others. So we have here a machloikis, what is the status, what should be done with this? And the Rishonim ask that we just said, the metaltli the yasmi loy mishabdi, that a person's metaltli, that if the yisoyimim take ownership of the metaltlim, they're not mishubid. So what's the question of our Mishnah that we're going to be discussing? So some Rishonim explain, and this is the approach that we're going to take, that since these metaltlin did not come into the possession of the yisaimim, they were by the person who was holding the deposit, they were by the person who was holding the loan, the din of metaltlin the yasmi loy mishabdi is only on the metaltlin that are in the physical possession of the yisaimim. These were not in the physical possession of the yisaimim. Others explain that our Gemara is going according to the Mandama, our Mishnah is going according to the Mandama, that really Midaraisa, Metaplin are also Meshubit. It's just that the Rabbanon waived that Shibud, and the Rabbanon only waived the Shibud when the Metaplin were in the possession of the Yisoyimim, not under other circumstances. So, says Rav Tarfon Aimer, Yinosnu L'Koshel Shebehen. We give these metaltlin to the koishal, to the weakest. We'll explain this more in the Gemara, what the koishal is. Rav Kiva says, we don't have any mercy in din. The halacha is the halacha. El yinosnu yarshim, we give it to the yarshim, shekulin tzrichin shvua. If one wants to claim a debt from the estate of someone who passed away, or if a woman wants to claim a ksuba from the yarshim, they can only claim it with a shvua. Then a yarshim, however, yarshim do not require a shvua, and therefore the Rishonim explain that shows that their hold of these assets are stronger, and since their hold of these assets are stronger, they are the ones that get these assets. So Mefarshim asks, as we're going to learn in Mitzvah in the Sugyas, even if we say Matantli the Yasmi Loi Mishabdi, there still is a mitzvah for Yisoyimim to pay off the debts of the father. So if so, asked the Mefarshim, why is Rav Kiva saying, Ein Merachmin B'din? and we give it to the Yisayimim, don't the Yisayimim also have an obligation, a mitzvah, to pay off their father's debt? So some of Farshim explain, this is not the kind of mitzvah that we could force a Yosim to do. And since it's not a kind of a mitzvah that we could force a Yosim to do, if the Yosim says, I'm not interested in doing the mitzvah, ein merachim b'din. Other Mefarshim explain that Amish is referring to Yisayimim Huaktanim. And Yisayimim Huaktanim obviously do not have any mitzvah obligations. Another pshat that I saw is that we're referring to a situation where the Yisayimim have their own debts to pay. So now we have a situation. Should they pay their own debts or should they pay their father's debts? Certainly they have an obligation to pay, to use this money to pay their own debts before they have to pay their father's debts. Similar case. Hiniach payers tulushim min hakarka. If the father left payers that are disconnected from the ground, kol hakadosh b'hem zochim hem. There the halacha is that everyone, whoever is the first one to seize it, gains possession. There's a machloikis harishonim. What will be the halacha in the ratio? Do we also say this concept of tfisa that somebody could grab it? So the Meiri says the halacha is that tfisa would help in the ratio. He just says that in the ratio, since it's in somebody else's possession, it's not likely that there will be tfisa. But he holds that tfisa would help in the ratio. Other, that flaw disagrees, and he says that since it's in the physical possession of someone, tfisa will not help. So let's say the woman was the one that made the tfisa, but she made tfisa and the amount that she grabbed was more than the value of a ksuba, or if the bachoiv is the one that got hold of these assets, but what they were worth, yoisal chayva, more than the amount of the debt. Hamoisa, the difference. Rav Tarfon Oimer, you nasnul lekoshel shabahen. Again, we give it to the other person. So if the bachoiv made the tfisa, he would give the difference to the isha, and if the isha made the tfisa, she would give the difference to the bachoiv. It's the Yarshim who get these metatlin, so kulan tzrichen shvua, vein hayarshim tzrichen shvua. Ask the Gemara, lomli l'mister milva, lomli l'mister bekadim. Why did the Mishnah have to mention two different situations that really teach us the same concept that Rabbi Kiva says, that even though these metatlin were not in the physical possession of the Yisoymim, we still say metatli the Yasmi loy mishabdi, and Rav Tarfon disagrees. Answers Gemara Tzricha. We needed to mention both situations. Ditana milva, if we only mentioned the first case of milva, I would see, the Gemara says, we would think, b'hokam Rav Tarfon, mishadam milva letzonitna, a loan is given to the borrower, to the spent, and therefore it's not considered in existence that it should become the Yisoymim's. Ab kodin de isa be'ine, something that's left as a pikodin, which remains intact in the hands of the person who's holding it, Eimim Moed Le'er B'Kiva, that as soon as the father dies, it becomes the Yisoymim's. V'tana ha, if we only had the case of pikodin, we'd say b'hokam B'Kiva, that it becomes the Yisoymim's. Avol b'hach, by the milva, Eimim Moed Le'er B'Tarfin, maybe he agrees with Reb Tarfin, that's why tzricha, we needed to mention both milva and pikodin. So Rav Tarfon mentioned that we go to the Koshel. Who is the Koshel? Rav Yosef Rav Chanina Oimer, the Koshel Shevaraya, the one who is the weakest proof. And as Rashi explains, who we have here the widow and the creditor, whoever is holding the more recently dated shtar, he has the weakest proof, because as we know, the older the shtar, the further back you could go to Lekuchas, he's considered the weaker of the parties. That individual is considered the weaker of the parties. And that's the person that we want to help, and that's the Koshel. I saw a beautiful vort from Shlomo Kluger. It says, a pasuk in Tehillim, Haitziyim b'zov v'kesev v'ein b'shvotov Koshel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim with gold and silver and gold. Ve'en b'shvat of kaisho. What does it mean ve'en b'shvat of kaisho? Says Rav Shlomo Kluger. All of us are the, all of the people who left Mitzrayim were the descendants of Avram Avinu, who HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised him that they would get Rechush Gadol when they left Mitzrayim. But all of Klal Yisrael were equal descendants of Avram Avinu, and therefore shared that Kesev Vizav equally. Hoitziyam, he took them out the Kesev Vizav with silver and gold. The aim of Shvat of Kaishal. There was no weaker or stronger Shevet. They were all equal in sharing this Yerusha. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, we give it L'Ksubas Isha. We let the woman collect the Ksuba from them, Mishum Chinam. And there's a number of Pshatim in the Rishonim what Chinam means. One Pshat that Rashi suggests is Chinam. We want women to marry men, and if they will know that if their husband dies, they will have first claims on the asset, that will give them an incentive to get married. Other Rishonim Tosfos explains Shechina meaning that we want the woman to be able to get this Ksuba money so that she should be more attractive, that she should be able to get remarried. And another Pshat that I saw from the Aruch is that the Aruch says that if a wife, as she is married to a husband, recognizes that she will have first rights on her husband's Yerusha, she's more likely to treat her husband nicely because she sees what her husband is doing on her behalf. And chinam means that there will be better shalom bayis between the husband and wife as long as they're alive. Says the Gemara Tanai, this is machlokes tanoim, what kosher means. Rabbi Yamin Amar kosher b'shabaraya, the one that has the weakest document, the latest dated document for who kosher, and that's the proper thing to do, that he should get these assets. Rabbi Lazar Omer, l'ksubas isha m'shem chinam. We learned in the Mishnah, Niach Peres Talushin, that if the second case of the Mishnah was that if he left over Peres Talushin, again, Rav Tafid says it goes, either whoever does the tfisa gets it, and the other one gets the difference. And Rabbi Kiva says the Maisa goes to the Yarshin. Ask the Gemara, as we explained in our Mishnah, the basis for Rabbi Kiva's opinion is because Rabbi Kiva holds that these assets belong to the Yarshim. So why only is the Meiser going to the Yarshim? Rabbi Kiva, my ear, your Meiser, kula nami the Yarshim have, everything belongs to the Yarshim. Says the Gemara, and Achnami, Rabbi Kiva holds that everything will go to the Yarshim. Just for I did the Omer Rabbi Tarfin Meiser. Since Rabbi Tarfin was discussing the Meiser, Tani Iu Nami Meiser, so Rabbi Kiva also addresses the Meiser. But it's not only Meiser. Ask the Gemara, Rabbi Kiva Tfisla Mahani Klal. So according to Rashi, the Gemara's question is a freestanding question. The Gemara's questioning, does Rabbi Kiva ever agree to the concept of Tfisa or not? Tosfos, other Rishonim say that Rabbi Kiva is actually referring back to the Mishnah Daf Pei, where we learned that a Shomeres Yavam, if she did Tfisa, it's effective. So we see that there is a concept of Tfisa in Halacha, and that's why the Gemara is asking, what does Rabbi Kiva hold? Does Rabbi Kiva ever subscribe to Tfisa or not? Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rava, Amar Rav Nachman, so says Rava in the name of Rav Nachman, for who should Tafas Mechayim? That if the Tfisa took place while the father is still alive, Tfisa is effective. And as a Machlaikas Rishonim, everyone agrees that Rava Amar Rav Nachman is referring to a Baal Choyv. And the Rav is teaching us that even Rav Akiva will agree that if a Baal Choyv does Tfisa while the father is still alive, it's effective. What will be the halacha regarding ksuba? Here we already have a machlokes rishonim. Some rishonim say that tfisa works even by ksuba. Others disagree. Rav Tarfin asked the Gemara, according to Rav Tarfin, that says that tfisa helps even after the father died. The manchi hecha. Exactly where were these items that they could be subject to tfisa? Rav Shmuel Dami Tavayu, Vusha Tzibura Menachem Rishus Rabim. Only if the items were in Rishus Rabim could the Tfisa be effective. Al Basimta, if they were in a Simta is a quiet, recessed area near the Rishus Rabim. It becomes the Yusaimims, it's automatically considered the Yusaimims, and Tfisa would not help. Rav Yoichim Rish Lakh Dami Tavayu, Afilu Basimta, even if it's in a Simta, it's considered an area that doesn't become the Yisoimims, and Tfisa would be effective. Says the Gemara, Don Dinekrip Tarfin. There was an actual situation where somebody ceased, a creditor ceased the assets of the father after he died, and the Dayanim paskened like Krip Tarfin that he was allowed to keep it. The Hadri Resh Lakish loved the Minayu. Resh Lakish, however, reversed the decision. Why? And now Gemara begins to teach us what we've learned in Masechta and Sanhedrin. The Gemara says in Masechta and Sanhedrin that if someone makes a mistake in a Dvar Mishnah, something that's in a Mishnah, it's considered a reversible error, and the Dayanim have to reverse their decision. Omle Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan is saying, you're following the opinion of Rabbi Kiva, and asisa kishal Torah, and you're treating it like it was something in the Torah, that if I made a mistake, my decision is reversed. Says the Gemara, Leim B'Hakimilfki. Should we say that the machloikis of Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish is the mass of our Rish Lakish holds Tabit Va Mishnah Chayzer, that if somebody makes a mistake about something against what it says in a Mishnah, we reverse the Psak. Mass of our, and Rabbi Yochanan is going to hold Tabit Va Mishnah Ein Chayzer. And therefore, even though he made a mistake in passing Rabbi Tarfin, the decision stands. Says the Marloi, the Kulam Tabit Va Mishnah Chayzer. Everyone will agree that if he made a mistake against something that's clearly said in a Mishnah, the decision is reversed. However, Rabbi Yochanan holds, we follow the opinion of Rabbi Kiva only when he's disagreeing with a colleague, but not when he's disagreeing with his Rebbe. And Rabbi Tarfin was his Rebbe. Masav and Rish Lakish holds, halacha afilu merabbi, we follow the opinion of Rabbi Kiva even when he's disagreeing with his Rebbe, Reb Tarfin. Vibay Seima, the Kula Alma Halach Reb Kiva Michaver V'loim Rabbi. Everybody agrees we only follow the opinion of Reb Kiva when he argues with a colleague, not with his Rebbe. However, the Hach B'Hach Kamifgi Mar Savor Reb Yochanan held Reb Tarfin Rabbi Hava. Reb Tarfin was the Rebbe of Reb Kiva, and therefore we don't follow Reb Kiva's opinion here. Or Mar Savor. And Rish Lakish holds, Chaveri Hava, the Reb Tarfin was Rabbi Kiva's colleague, and therefore we follow the opinion of Rabbi Kiva. Vibay Seima, the Kulama, everybody could agree, Chaveri Hava, the Reb Tarfin was Rabbi Kiva's colleague. Vach Vahakamilfki, Masav Aloch Kitma, Rish Lakish holds that the Halacha always follows the opinion of Rabbi Kiva when he's disagreeing with his colleagues. Masover, Rabbi Yochanan holds only Matan Itmer. We try to follow the opinion of Akiva. We lean in that direction, but not that we necessarily follow it. And in fact, I saw that the Sharm Tzion of Halacha says that these terminologies are very important even in what it says in Shulchan Aruch. He says sometimes in Shulchan Aruch it says Noihagin, and sometimes in Shulchan Aruch it says Minog. He says there's a very big difference between Noigim and Minog. Noyagin means that this is the halacha and we have to follow that. Minig is that noyagin, you have to follow like that l'chatchila. But when the Shulchan Aruch uses or the Rama uses the word minig, or nagu, means you have to follow it and it's not open for discussion. Kreva the Rabbi Yochanan, the relative of Rabbi Yochanan, toughest power of the Yasmim Asimta. Grabbed a cow inherited by the Yisoyimim from a simta. Also came to Rabbi Yochanan. I came to Rabbi Yochanan. Omelu. Shabbat Ipsu. What you did is fine. Also came to Rish Lakish. Then they came with the Shiloh to Rish Lakish. Omelu. Zilla Hadr. You have to return the cow. Also came to Rabbi Yochanan. So they came to Rabbi Yochanan. Omelu. So he said to them, Ma Esa, what should I do? She connect the Cholok Alai. Rish Lakish disagrees with me. So one question the Rishonim ask is, but Rabbi Yochanan already gave a psak, and according to Rabbi Yochanan, that's not a reversible psak. So Mefarshim say it really wasn't a psak of Rabbi Yochanan, because Rabbi Yochanan really wasn't allowed to render a psak since he was a relative. Another point that Tosfos makes is that even Rabbi Yochanan in the previous Gemara says the Matan Itmer. We lean and try to follow the opinion of Akiva. So why over here was Rabbi Yochanan ready to follow the opinion of Reb Tarfin? So Tosfos answers that it was b'diavad, that they already had grabbed it when they came to ask the question. B'diavad, we follow the opinion of Reb Tarfin. Ritva says not only had they already taken the cow, but they had already slaughtered it. Says the Gemara, Hahu back with the Yasmin. to somebody who was a shepherd of the cattle of orphans. The Tufts determine that the creditor grabbed a axe from him. The creditor said, I seized it while the father was still alive. You only seized it after the father passed away. He asked the shepherd, do you have witnesses that it was only seized after the father's death? So he said no. Since this person who seized it could have said, I bought it, yep. So he has a migui, and therefore he's believed to say that I seized it while the father was alive, and as we're learning, that seizure is effective. Ask the Rishonim that even though he doesn't have Edim, but he himself is saying it. So why is he not considered an Eid Echod? That the halacha is that he should, that an Eid Echod is Mechayiv Shvua, that based on the testimony of an Eid Echod, this person who sees it should have to make a Shvua. So the Rishonim answer that since he is a Nogei B'davar, because if he will be held responsible by the Yisoyimim, so therefore he can't even be Mechayiv Shvua. Ask the Gemara, Amr Shlokish HaGoydris, animals, Eilem Chazaka, there's no Chazaka, because they're mobile, so they don't have a Chazaka, just because they're my Rishus doesn't mean that it's mine, because animals move around. Answers the Gemara, Shani Torah, the Masira L'Roya. These oxen were given over to these shepherds to God, and therefore, if they're found in another person's possession, that is a proof that it's owned by the person who's possessing it. Says the Gemara, the Bein Nesia Tofsa Amsa the Yasmi Mesimta. The members of the Nasi's house and had a situation where one of their creditors died, and they grabbed, they seized a maid from a simta. Yosra Avu Rav Chanina Bar Papi Rav Yitzchak Nafcha, the Yosra Abba Gabayu. Amalei Shabbat of Sinu. What you did is fine. Amalei Rabba Meshun the Bein Nesia Ninu Mechnifsinu, because they're from the Nasi's home, you're trying to flatter them. For Don Dinek Rav Tarfin, when somebody tried to follow the opinion of Rav Tarfin, for had Rish Lakish of the Minayu, and Rish Lakish said that we follow the opinion of Rav Akiva, and Tfisa La'acha Misa is not effective. So why are you trying to flatter the people of the Nasi's home by saying they were right? So asks Rav Yoshev, it wasn't just that they were flattering them, it's much worse. What they did was halachically incorrect. Why is it just calling chanufa? Says Rabbi Yosher, based on what we explained earlier in our shir, there is a din of that the balchoy, that the yusaimim have an obligation to pay their father's debt. So the truth is that the yusaimim weren't completely right here either in not paying off the debt. Still, the halacha doesn't follow Rabbi Tarfin, and they shouldn't have seized it, and that's why it's only called chanufa, but not called something that was done shloikedin.